the way we're implementing this roadmap to do is to do it in an agile way, right? As we put out this roadmap, you see a lot of mention of pilots and partnerships and minimum viable products, right? Like a big part of that is for us to get enough out there pretty soon that we have a sense of what's getting traction.
Today on the Daily Scoop podcast from the Scoop News Group, the future of FedRAMP. GSA's Eric Mill joins the podcast to discuss the roadmap for what's next as FedRAMP evolves. It's Tuesday, April 9th, 2024. Welcome to the Daily Scoop podcast, where you'll hear the latest news and trends facing government leaders. I'm the host of the Daily Scoop podcast, Billy Mitchell. Before we get to today's headlines, we have a quick programming note about changes to the Daily Scoop podcast that are coming soon. Starting next week, we're going back to delivering podcasts on a daily basis with new short-form episodes of The Daily Scoop airing each day, Monday through Friday, covering the top news at the intersection of the public sector and the technology industry. With that, we'll be scaling back our in-depth interviews to once a week to dive deeper into and enhance conversations with top leaders in the government technology space. Again, look for that new format Daily Scoop podcast wherever you listen to podcasts starting Monday, April 15th. Here's what's happening now. The Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency issued an emergency directive last week to address the impact on federal agencies from a breach of Microsoft carried out by a hacking unit linked to Russia's Foreign Intelligence Agency. That's according to three government officials familiar with the matter. In a briefing last Tuesday, CISA executives discussed with federal officials an operation believed to have been carried out by the hacking group known as Midnight Blizzard and discussed the directive. A CISA spokesperson told CyberScoop that the agency continues to provide guidance to federal civilian executive branch agencies regarding actions to secure accounts potentially placed at risk through the Midnight Blizzard campaign disclosed by Microsoft in January of 2024. CISA's emergency directive, dated April 2nd, has been issued to federal agencies but has not yet been made public. Scoop News Group viewed a summary of the directive, which is focused on mitigating activity related to Midnight Blizzard. The emergency directive is the latest indication of the growing impact of the Russian operation. When Microsoft first disclosed the operation in January, the company said Russian operatives had succeeded in accessing emails belonging to senior company executives. But in March, the company said their breach was more severe than initially understood, and that Russian operatives had also succeeded in accessing Microsoft's source code. In other news, the Department of Defense has promising news on its journey to adopt zero trust security. After months of preparation and funding, the Defense Department has begun executing on its ambitious plans to transition to a zero trust cybersecurity framework by the end of fiscal 2027, according to multiple senior IT officials at the Pentagon. Despite the seemingly aggressive timeline for introducing an entirely new cybersecurity concept across the department, different IT officials at the Defense Department said last week that they are on track to meet the deadline. Specifically, Dave McCune, DOD Chief Information Security Officer, acknowledged that the department is clearly in the implementation phase. And during the remainder of fiscal 2024 and into fiscal 2025, the DOD Zero Trust Program Management Office plans to rapidly move out on developing Zero Trust proof of concept pilots, with at least 15 pilots already lined up, according to Randy Resnick, the leader of that office. And already, the department is looking beyond 2027 and planning to implement what it refers to as advanced levels of zero trust cybersecurity, as well as other use cases for the architecture. That's according to CIO John Sherman, who said this effort is not a one and done, and that the DoD must look beyond the target level zero trust to the broader implementation of zero trust that will come 5 years later. You can read more about these stories and much more at fedscoop.com. It's been 13 years since FedRAMP was created as the federal government's cloud security compliance program. And like any federal technology program that's been around that long, its mission and the services it set out to provide in 2011 are very different from what agencies need today. In particular, the FedRAMP Program Office recently wrote in a new roadmap for the program that it is critical that it be well-positioned to make sure federal agencies get the full benefit of software as a service cloud offerings, acknowledging that while FedRAMP does have some SaaS offerings in its marketplace, it's not nearly enough and it's not working the way that it should. As the General Services Administration explores the future of FedRAMP, including seeking out its next leader, the agency's Executive Director for Cloud Strategy, Eric Mill, joins the podcast to discuss how GSA is approaching this next chapter for FedRAMP.
Eric, welcome to the Daily Scoop podcast. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me here, Billy.
Well, it's great to catch up. I've known you for quite a while and seen a lot that you've done across the federal space back to your days originally at GSA, and now you're back at GSA, which is really exciting. I know you're here to talk about the future of FedRAMP and some of the evolution currently underway there. But before we get into that, I would love to hear about the new role and sort of what that entails. Can you tell us more about that as we get started?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So I just, as you mentioned, rejoined GSA a few months ago as the executive director for cloud strategy here in the technology wing of GSA, the Technology Transformation Services. And the role is because of what's going on right now at this time and place, is dominantly focused on FedRAMP. As I'm sure you're familiar, there's a lot going on with, you know, what different stakeholders are looking for from FedRAMP. And it seemed like a good opportunity to come and help work on some of the big rocks that need moving here, including, you know, so I'm sure we'll talk about recruiting a permanent FedRAMP director, working with OMB and others to implement different policy changes. So it's a pretty exciting time here to focus on this for a bit here at GSA. And so that's what I came over to do.
That's great. And, in the last year, I think FedRAMP has been a pretty big topic. You mentioned that OMB policy and all the changes going underway there. So let's talk about the future of FedRAMP in broad terms, how GSA sees it's going, you know, how it's moving forward. What's next for FedRAMP and why is this shift occurring at this current time?
Yeah, so I think it is. Well, why don't I just start with just the briefest of intros about FedRAMP itself? I mean, just in case folks clicked on a podcast about FedRAMP, but without totally knowing what it was, which is, you know, FedRAMP is the government's program for reviewing the security of cloud services of all stripes, right? And cloud services is a pretty big concept, right? Like it is all of the cloud computing infrastructure that you sometimes hear about, like, you know, the big, you know, globally spread data centers and automatable databases and servers that organizations and people can use to make things they couldn't before. But it's also all of the different pieces of software. It's the recording software we're using for this podcast right now. Right? It is almost anything you might do on the web or the internet that is of any substance. That is, you know, that's not something that the U.S. government really can avoid, right? The U.S. government needs to be using modern tools like everybody else. So FedRAMP exists because, you know, when an enterprise like the U.S. government needs to use some of these more significant cloud services, especially when they're really of pretty high security significance, you know, that's something that they need to take seriously because they're effectively putting some trust in a third party. Ultimately, that's what all cloud services are. You're letting another organization run a piece of your infrastructure for you. And the U.S. government is a very big, spread out organization. I don't think it's controversial to say that it's fairly decentralized in how it operates in practice in a lot of important ways. It was important to bring some consistency to that. So I think a bit of history would help point to why some of the changes that are happening to FedRAMP are. Right? So when FedRAMP was established, it was 2011. It was done through a memorandum by the Office of Management and Budget at the time. And they were effectively, you know, convening GSA, the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Defense to create a system for doing this. And at the time in 2011, the way that was designed was reflective of what was happening in the cloud marketplace at the time. So in 2011, you really had a lot of organizations rushing to make sure they were able to take advantage of the explosion in cloud computing infrastructure that was happening, right? Like I'm trying to avoid mentioning vendor names for the purpose of the podcast, but there are a few big ones that I'm sure you can imagine.
Absolutely. Right?
Especially, you know, they had been growing for some years in the mid-2000s and the late-2000s. You saw some of these come on the scene. And so by the time 2011 rolled around, it was very clear to the entire commercial enterprise sector in particular that this is where the future is. And the U.S. government very much needed to be on that train as well if it was going to have a hope of running public services to the same level of scalability, flexibility, performance, security that that people had already come to expect by then and certainly expect now. The program was optimized to bring in these rather large, right, globally spread out infrastructure providers, of which there are certainly, a growing number, right? And there's a lot of them, but there's not many thousands of them, right? If you look today at the cloud marketplace, you fast forward 13 years where we are now, it's pretty, FedRAMP has succeeded at bringing in many of the big cloud infrastructure providers. That the usage of those things is pretty ubiquitous inside the government. It's hard to find a federal agency that doesn't use one or two of these big providers. The big gap that is not being addressed in the way that it needs to be is everything else, right? It's all of the software that people are using. Some of that is quite big. Your big enterprise collaboration suites that include email and chat and document sharing and all that stuff, that is pretty big as well. And it's not to downplay the security significance of some of those services. But there's also a long tail of a lot of things that are doing one thing well or a few things well, right? There's project management tools. There's graphical design tools just to sketch things out, right? There's also tools that are aimed at particular sectors, right? There are tools that may not be useful for all enterprises, but if you're an organization whose mission is in the healthcare sector, there's a whole little subsector of cloud services just for that, right? Just that have been designed around the needs of what it means for people who ordinarily process, the kinds of information and services that happen in the healthcare sector. So this stuff has exploded so that it's not just a manageable number of general enterprise-wide useful things. It's now like a galaxy of interesting products that you really do need to keep up these days if you want to be able to both move at speed. And I think critically, this is something I think can sometimes get a little lost. From a security perspective, it's incredibly valuable for federal agencies and any enterprise really, but I'll focus on federal agencies. It's incredibly valuable from a security perspective for them to be able to focus their own very finite time, resources, people, energy on the things that only they can manage, right? Like, we don't want a cabinet agency spending their best technical people on, project collaboration software like that can be a solved problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do have to keep in mind that it's very important that we make sure that we're using the safest and highest performance tools, and FedRAMP exists to make to light the way to use these tools safely. It's very important to remember that being able to actually take advantage of these commodity tools and run less ourselves and focus our best efforts where these agencies have to do that, where they're very mission specific, nobody's going to be doing this for them kind of places, that is a security advantage because we could be securing those things better. And it's just an operational advantage. It is an enterprise relief to be able to get there. And the trick is being able to get there in a way that we can trust. I feel like I answered maybe three or four questions in a row, but
no, that's fantastic. And I think you present the listener this, interesting evolution in the way that federal agencies and the federal government are digesting cloud services. And now it's at this moment where there's tons and tons of these software as a service applications. And that brings me to sort of my next question. Where's the tension there for the FedRAMP program? Where's the challenge, and what's FedRAMP doing to address it? Because I sense that there's probably a scale issue. There's a ton of software as a service out there, and it's not as quickly becoming available to agencies because there's so much of it. But tell me more about that and sort of what the next steps are. I know that FedRAMP just recently produced a roadmap looking forward to how it's going to transform a bit. So how does that play out moving into the next few years?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And scale is certainly a significant part of that. You know, you see that word all over the materials coming out of GSA and OMB and you know, out of the mouths of anybody who is talking about FedRAMP over the last 5 years is that the program does need to scale more than it has been. But, you know, that's not just a matter of pushing a button, right? I mean, there are reasons why it has been tough for the program to do that. You know, what we're trying to do with an updated roadmap and why we've gone to the trouble of producing it publicly is to show that we're attentive to some of the problems that folks have repeatedly been pointing out with the FedRAMP program, like where there are opportunity costs, where we can build on what the things that FedRAMP has done well, but meet the places where it needs to go. And it is with these goals in mind. It's with the goal of having FedRAMP evolve into a program that is aggressively making available the best and most interesting, fulsome part of the cloud sector, so that the federal government just has the stuff available and doesn't have to worry about it in that way. So the roadmap that we published is organized around a few principles that are intended to speak to what we think it'll take to get there. Right, so I'll go through these. Some, you know, these are our high level principles that we have tried to organize some specific initiatives around. So, the biggest one probably that's worth putting first for us is just orienting FedRAMP around the customer experience. Right, so that means really paying attention to where this has been where it has been a more difficult process to go through than it was actually probably intended from the get-go. And I think from our perspective, again, I go back to the fact that like the program was originally set up to focus on these big sweeping infrastructure providers. What it means for a cloud provider to look at FedRAMP and decide like, okay, this cost to me is worthwhile, right? That's a different kind of question for a company when that you are talking about like a you're going to be a big provider that is potentially useful to just about any kind of enterprise, right? Then and for lots of different uses than it is for a smaller or medium-sized software company that, you know, has a product, is doing pretty well with where they are, and they're considering whether they want to get into the federal marketplace. Costs that might have been just sort of unexamined because they were bearable in the past, like as part of the process, are things we really need to be willing to revisit now. So as one tangible example of this, we're looking at how to speed up the process after authorization is done, to speed up the process of being able to review and deploy changes. And I can get into more details about that as we go here. But, you know, we're taking a look at a process that's essentially been designed around, you know, blocking government approval on specific changes on specific snapshots in time, something folks have had a lot of raised issues with for some time, and we want to see if we can reorient that process to be more streamlined. Right, so that's something where we can look at our machine that we have inside and that we've established with cloud providers, and look at how we can reconfigure that machine to get a lot of the same outcomes, but to move around where we're putting the complexity. Another principle that we're organizing a roadmap around is just around cybersecurity leadership. And there's two different sides to that. You know, one of the things that we know we need to do is make sure that any FedRAMP authorization just by default is something any agency feels that they can rely on. And, you know, we have a lot of the FedRAMP program, you know, puts a pretty significant amount of effort into reviewing all the FedRAMP authorizations that come through the system. So for folks who may not know, FedRAMP has operated a little indirectly for the last decade, where the program office at GSA is not doing the authorizations, right? So you have an agency, an individual agency often who is, you know, doing their own authorization process, producing the result of, you know, what they would be doing to authorize that cloud service for their use. And then they're providing it to the FedRAMP program office. And then some back and forth and work happens to produce a package that the FedRAMP program will sign off on as being useful for potentially any federal agency. That's a similar process happens with what's historically been what are often called JAB provisional ATOs done by the Joint Authorization Board, where, you know, the teams from those three agencies produce the work, they do the provisional authorization, pass it to the program office, who finalizes it and puts it on the marketplace. I don't think it's controversial to point out that people do see, you know, they see a spectrum across the FedRAMP marketplace of, you know, of how deep these things go, of how deep the packages go. And that's completely understandable, because this is, has been from the beginning, by design, a somewhat decentralized process. There's meant to be a push and pull here. And some of this is inextricable because it is, you know, because there just are a variety of, like, agencies will do things differently because they should. There's a difference of risk tolerances. But we want to see some broader consistency to FedRAMP authorization. So part of our cybersecurity leadership work is to start articulating what, like, more explicitly than has been the case to date, you know, what is consistently there in every FedRAMP authorization. The other side of the coin of cybersecurity leadership is also really making sure we're keeping real-world security outcomes in mind. And so this means taking a look at some of the policies that descend from federal requirements and looking at how they're actually applied in practice to make sure that we're applying them in a smart way.
Yeah.
You know, there are a few things that fit into this bucket. We mentioned a couple on a roadmap that we're planning to tackle. Things around cryptography requirements, for example, where, you know, they're important security goals that we need to make sure we apply them in a way that we don't end up inhibiting the larger goal of having the most secure cryptography possible. So we need to kind of step into the arena a little bit more than we have been on making clear what the bar is for a FedRAMP authorization, and then also making sure that if we're going to do that, that we're always being the smartest, we're doing that in the smartest way possible, and we're always, you know, we're always able to, like, go back and forth as we need to with the cloud providers who often are innovating in these spaces in security itself to make sure we're landing at the spot that works best for the U.S. government. I'll quickly mention a couple here. I feel like I'm taking a little bit long on this question of yours.
No worries.
You know, the third principle that we talk about there is scaling, right? Is scaling the marketplace. That all of this stuff contributes to scaling. One of the things that we're calling out there is that we're putting greater emphasis on expanding kind of the overall capacity and throughput of the FedRAMP ecosystem. So, for example, we mentioned there a pilot that we're excited about pursuing with DISA at the Department of Defense. DISA, I don't want to screw up their acronym. I believe they're the Defense Information Systems Agency.
You got it. Yeah.
They're the part of the Department of Defense that acts as a little bit like a FedRAMP program office within DoD, right? They're the cloud authorizing official for the Department of Defense. And so, you know, they operate their work in a very FedRAMP-like fashion, right? They literally follow FedRAMP processes, and, you know, their team is also part of the Joint Authorization Board that is producing work that is going into the FedRAMP marketplace. So one of the things we want to be able to do is really streamline the process with groups like them, and we'll work with them as a pilot, so that we are moving more to a place where we're understanding and agreeing on and auditing to some extent the process that's going on, as opposed to the details of each individual package that's popping out of the process, so that we are in a situation, we can arrive at a point where we know we can, things that come out of that process can basically just go right to the marketplace with a lot less work than is going on now, right?
Yeah.
Like, so that's an example there. The last principle is FedRAMP operating itself in a more technology forward manner, right? Data first, API first. We still are an organization that is, FedRAMP is still a program that's moving around a lot of multi-hundred page Word documents, right? And that it doesn't, everybody understands why that's the case. Federal agencies have a lot of that stuff inside their own house as well. But the world has been trying to move to a better place than that. Like we should be able to articulate more of this stuff as data than we do. There's been a lot of work from NIST, GSA, from the private sector for a long time. We're very committed to OSCAL as a data format for helping us move to or towards packages that themselves are data, are machine readable data, and can be transmitted between us and other organizations, between cloud providers and agencies. And so that we can also start treating it in a data-like fashion, right? So we can articulate, inheritance where, this security goal is met because they're relying on an infrastructure provider that already met that security goal in this way over there that, can be easily pulled out as data from that package, right? So we want to be able to take full advantage of, some very basic stuff around just having things articulable as data. And that's, again, something that FedRAMP has, we have been working towards for a while, and we're really looking to accelerate how, the interactions we want to have with people from a data and API perspective going forward.
That's great. I mean, it seems like end-to-end transformation. There's a lot of changes underway and a lot of progress being made there in this journey and in the vision. I think, the next layer to that, to some degree, is the director, and FedRAMP is looking for a new director to kind of lead this new chapter into the journey. So tell me more about the vision for what that director, the director's role that you're looking for. And I know that TTS has some hiring sessions that you'd like to talk about. So tell me more about that whole package and how you're looking to bring on the next leader in the FedRAMP journey.
Yeah, happy to. We're very excited to be hiring for the FedRAMP director position. The role is the director of the FedRAMP program to oversee a team of very senior, excited people, and to help lead this change, right? To really fully embody and lead this change that's going on with the FedRAMP program. From a sense of timing and logistics, you mentioned we do have some information sessions that we're doing to provide more information to folks and answer questions. The next one is the same day that we are recording, so they may already be done by the time this is online. But there should be material from those that people can look at, and the position will be opening a little bit later in April. We don't have a date that we're announcing quite yet, but it will be fairly soon. I think there's a couple things that are important to emphasize about the FedRAMP director role. Right, so it's a pretty exciting role at an exciting time, right? So, your FedRAMP is a bridge program between the government and the private sector, as well as a bunch of interesting stakeholders in the White House and Congress. So you really get to be at the center of things, right? And, certainly we'll, I think it's going to be a very visible position, and it's going to be one that is also able to have, I think, quite a bit of what's the word I'm looking for here? I mean, this is a very special time for FedRAMP, right? There is a government-wide mandate for change. There is a new board coming into existence. So the new FedRAMP board will be convened by OMB soon. So the FedRAMP director is going to have the opportunity to really establish those initial relationships and precedent for how the program works with the board. It's an opportunity to really get off on good footing with all the other stakeholders of the program, the CIOs and CISOs of the federal government, folks at OMB and other parts of the White House. I think another piece of this that I think is worth emphasizing, right? So we published this roadmap just last week for the next year and a half, 2 years. Hopefully this is we definitely hope that this is an exciting vision, right? Coming in for any FedRAMP director. There's a lot of things here that have been talked about for some time, and that I think we're really starting to put real resources and focus into. Any FedRAMP director who comes in is going to have ample opportunity to steer this vision, to revisit things as they need. Part of what we're structuring, the way we're implementing this roadmap to do, is to do it in an agile way, right? As we put out this roadmap, you see a lot of mention of pilots and partnerships and minimum viable products, right? Like, a big part of that is for us to get enough out there pretty soon that we have a sense of what's getting traction, right? And what is starting to be the most useful way to continue to spend our resources, things that we're missing that are, it's becoming clear, like, really should be included more than they were. Like, there's going to be very much some pivot opportunities here. I think we said in our blog post that we'll be updating the roadmap a couple times a year. We do mean that. And I think any FedRAMP director coming in is going to have a lot of ability to take this in the direction it needs to go and to respond to what the program is seeing as we go out on this. So I think that's an important point to mention.
Okay. Well, that's fantastic. And I'm sure, as that announcement comes out, listeners will definitely want to know about that. So we'll make sure to keep them abreast of any updates that the team comes out with.
I appreciate that. I should mention too, that when the posting does go up, it may well be a posting where you want to apply as soon as possible. And so you can go to the TTS join site. It's join.tts.gsa.gov. It's got the job description of the FedRAMP director up there. It should have material from the information sessions, and it's got the ability to get notified when the posting does open on USA Jobs. So definitely encourage folks to clue into that.
That's great. Well, Eric, as we close out, we've talked a lot about the way forward, but, just as a sort of open-ended question, there's legislation out there in the FedRAMP Authorization Act. There's the OMB draft guidance that's sort of in the works there. How are you working in partnership with those sort of flagpoles, if you will, and sort of what else might you want to address to listeners as they think about the future of FedRAMP?
Yeah, FedRAMP is a very multi-stakeholder program, and that's not uncommon in government to formal when there are these sort of government-wide programs that everybody has a stake in. Government is very happy to formalize that, and so we have an incoming FedRAMP board and very strong relationships at the staff and leadership levels with the Office of Management and Budget and other EOP components that we work with and talk to on a regular enough basis. I think one of the, I definitely don't want to put words in OMB's mouth, but I've seen them talk about this publicly in similar terms. One of the, I think, advantages that we have about what's ended up happening in terms of OMB putting out a draft FedRAMP memorandum for public comment, and then the FedRAMP program is starting to move out on some of these things. There's actually also an opportunity for what the program is learning and experiencing to feed back right into the final product. And I think that is very much, I don't know. It, honestly, I think it's something that probably should happen more than it does. When we can do that, when you have the opportunity for there to be a feedback loop like that, I think that's very important. I think one other thing I'd just like to add here is the degree to which this is a really important year for companies, for people to be looking for those opportunities to provide comment and to like really participate and jump in and let FedRAMP and GSA know what you're experiencing, right? There's sort of never been a better time for it. And, speaking back to the FedRAMP Authorization Act, one of the more important pieces of that legislation, in addition to creating, the Federal Secure Cloud Advisory Committee, it's a very important body for providing feedback, is the FedRAMP program is, on the hook and is excited to do public engagement and comment on most things of significance that come out the door. We're taking that really seriously here and, instrumenting up like regular processes for doing that. And we're really in a very sensitive posture, I think, making sure that what we are doing is actually like making a dent in what cloud providers and agencies need to see. Because if it's not, like, you know, what's it all for? And I think, you know, sometimes people, in my experience, I've seen a lot of people sort of wave away or not lean into participating in some of these comment processes, not really knowing what happens behind the scenes, maybe, or just imagining the government as a as an uncaring machine. But, you know, having been on the receiving end myself from a few different organizations of, you know, what you get in the door, it really can matter. And you don't have to have even a fancy affiliation behind you for your idea to be heard and taken seriously and have an impact, right? So be on the lookout for more of that over this year from FedRAMP and GSA.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great way to close it and a great point to bring up that, you know, let the people know they're being heard. So I think that's a fantastic point. Eric, great conversation as always. Really excited for the future of FedRAMP. We'll definitely keep an eye on it, but just want to appreciate you, or thank you and say I appreciate your time.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on today, Billy. I really enjoyed it.
You can learn more about FedRAMP at thedailyscooppodcast.com. The Daily Scoop podcast is available on all podcast platforms. If you've already rated the podcast on your platform of choice, thanks so much. High ratings and good reviews of the show help more people to find it. The Daily Scoop podcast is a production of the Scoop News Group in Washington, D.C. Adam Butler and Carlin Fisher help put the show together, and the entire Scoop News Group team contributes. Again, we'll be back next week with brand new episodes on a daily basis. Until then, I'm your host, Billy Mitchell. Thanks so much for listening.